Last night, I stayed up late preparing a shmooze that I had planned on giving over. When I woke up in the morning, I just wasn't in the mood to give that shmooze. I personally have trouble always before I have to give a shmooze, going back and forth. I can't talk about something that I'm not excited to talk about. And even though I like the points in that shmooze, but I was more excited and passionate to talk about what I decided to change to today. Rabbi Kiva says, "Zeh klal gadol b'Torah v'ahata l'reicha kamocha." And Rabbi Steinman asks, "When is zeh klal gadol b'Torah? Zeh klal gadol? There's certain parts of the Torah that are more important or more crucial than others. You're not allowed to skip over mitzvos, any of them. The Mishnah Pekeva says, 'Habiratz the mitzvah kala b'chamura.' You have to run after a light mitzvah the same way you have to run after a heavy mitzvah. We don't know the schar of mitzvot. So what do you mean, zeh klal gadol b'Torah? This is a klal gadol in the Torah." And Rosh Simon explains, gadol sometimes can mean, like we find by truma gadola, a person has to take off of his crops, truma, maaser sheni. So truma gadola is the first thing you take off. There's no amount to it. You can give even a little seed. You can give a tiny drop in order to be yotzei truma gadola. So why is it called truma gadola? Gadola because it comes first. Somebody has a ben agadol, it's his oldest son. He came first. So gadol sometimes doesn't necessarily mean more important, but it means it comes first. It's the first thing that you focus on. V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. If somebody is looking for why something happened to them that was difficult and it's something that they need to work on, because that klal gadol b'Torah, it comes first. Like truma gadola, it comes first. It's the first thing that you choose to focus on. So with that thought in mind, I decided to talk about this topic a little bit. And we'll start with a story that I told once on an out Shabbos last year. So maybe a couple of the Shanabet heard this story. It's a story by Rabbi Chiel Michel Stern. He's a Rav, still alive, in Ezra's Torah. He wrote over 70 Svarim. And he tells over of a story that happened to him a couple of years ago, where he went to the doctor one day because his stomach was hurting, something was in pain. They ended up taking a CAT scan, and they told him that your intestines are filled with a growth, with a cancer, and it's so spread all around your intestines that there's no way we could clean out the growths that are within your intestines. We have no other option but to cut out your entire intestine. He was in shock. This just fell on him suddenly one day. Cut out the intestine. Somebody who lives like that, they can no longer eat anymore through their mouth. They can no longer go to the bathroom in a regular way. It affects the quality of your life 24/7. And it was an emergency. They had to do it right away so the cancer wouldn't continue to spread. This was like on a Wednesday or a Thursday. He said, "On Sunday morning, come in for the surgery when we're going to remove your intestine." He had a few more days left to this kind of a normal kind of life where you eat and drink and you can go to the bathroom. And he was so shooken up, and it was coming close to Shabbos, and he was crying. He was down, he was sad, he was crying. His whole family got together for Shabbos to be with him, mechazik him. He got up at Kiddush. He started to make Kiddush, and all of a sudden again, he broke down crying. He was thinking to himself, "I'm never going to be able to make Kiddush again. I'm not going to be able to drink wine, grape juice, hamotzi. I'm not going to be able to make hamotzi. Benching, I'm never going to be able to make in the mitzvah of birkas hamazon, a bracha d'oraisa that a person could do every day, a few times a day. I'm never going to be able to do that anymore. I'm not going to be able to do the mitzvah of matzah. I'm not going to be able to do arba kosos." He was trying to, all the mitzvahs that he now couldn't do anymore were coming up into his head. If we were to, God forbid, if somebody, a regular person, would be faced with this kind of a news, they would be thinking about how uncomfortable his life would be. What brought him to tears and sobbing was, "I can't do this mitzvah, I can't make this brach, I can't..." But that brought him, he was sobbing, and it was Shabbos, and at Shabbos you're not supposed to be b'tzar, but he couldn't shake it off of him. And he told his family he wanted to be alone. They were trying to be mismanaged, he said, I want to be alone. He went to his bedroom, and he lay down, and he was crying. And he fell asleep while crying. Now, a little bit of background before we tell you his dream. 42 years ago, he had lived in Baca. And he was learning in Kola at the time. And he was living on 1,200 shekel a month. That's what he would get from the Kola. Living on very, very the basic of basics, just to be able to maybe make the rent and bread and water. But right next to his house, there was an old age home. And on the way to the kol, he decided, listen, you have all these old people, they just want something to talk to them, just something to smile them, say good morning to them, every one of them, and they're all sick in different kind of ways. I could do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim to every single one of them. I could, if I visit 50 of them, 50 mitzvah d'oraisas of Bikur Cholim every single morning on my way to Kollel. So he decided on his way to Kollel, he went through this old age home, went around to all people, good morning, how are you? Is there anything I could do for you, anything I could bring to you? And he would make them happy. And the Rambam says that to be yotzei Bikur Cholim, you also have to daven for them, so you give them a bracha, you should feel well. And he would go to Kollel with 50 mitzvahs, 100 mitzvahs every single morning already behind him of Bikur Cholim. And he used to do that every day. One day, he's in the old age home and he sees an old man crying, screaming in pain, on the floor, screaming in pain, holding his stomach. And he wants to help him, and the man can't even talk. And he goes to the nurse. He tells the nurse, well, what's with this old man? He says, we can't help him. We can't help him. He stopped up. He needs to go to the hospital to be able to open up. He should be able to go to the bathroom. We can't help him because we don't. Our responsibility is to take care of him while he's here. We don't have to pay for the ambulance. We don't have to pay for the hospital. His family is supposed to pay for the ambulance, but they refuse to pay for the ambulance. They say that it's our responsibility. And we can't go through this. It's 420 shekel just to send him to the hospital. Meanwhile, this old man is dying. He's in terrible pain. Rav Yechiel Melchior Stern, he couldn't bear to see it. He took 420 shekel out of his pocket. That's more than a third of what he would live on every month. And he ordered him an ambulance and sent him to the hospital. A week later, he sees the same thing again. He goes back to the old age home. He sees the same old man, the same pain. Now he understands what's going on. He's horrified of this terrible family. Nobody's taking care of this old man. How could it be? He didn't feel like he had any other choice. He took out another 420 shekel. He doesn't have that money. That means his family won't eat that month. They're not going to be able to pay rent that month. He's going to be in debt right now. But he took out the 420 shekel. He ordered the ambulance. And he sent him, afterwards he called up, he found the number of the children of this old man, he yelled at them, he gave them Musar, keep it out of the aim, I can do it to your father. And from then on, the problem didn't happen anymore. That night, 42 years later, he fell asleep crying, and the old man comes to him in the dream. And right away he recognizes him, he remembers him. He said, you worried about my intestines? I just went to the Kisei HaKavod and I screamed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was worried about my intestines. He couldn't afford and he took care of me. He was concerned about my intestines, and you're going to have his intestines removed? His intestines are going to be removed? And I screamed and I cried and I sobbed in front of Kisei HaKavod. You're going to be okay. And then he woke up. And he decided not to tell anybody, to keep it tzanua. In a bracha shorari al adara sanam in a ayin, in a bracha. It's for it to stay lasting, it needs to be hidden from the eye. He kept it quiet. But when he went to the hospital on Sunday morning, he told the doctor, I'm asking you, please don't remove my intestine. Clean it out. The doctor said, it's not possible. The growth is everywhere. I can't clean such a thing out. He said, I'm going to pay you anyway, whether you're successful at it or not. Try to just clean out the intestine and don't take out the whole thing. After the surgery, the doctor said, I don't know what happened. But while I was doing it, I felt like the Malach Raphael was right there with me, guiding my hand from growth to it. Everything came out perfectly. You're completely clean, and his intestine stayed intact. We say every single morning, the Mishnah from Maseches Peah, Elu Dvarim She'Adam Ocha Perasem Ba'olam Hazeh Ba'Keren Kemos Olam Haba Kibar Ave'em Gumilas Chasadim. And the list continues, Bikur Cholim also, that there are things that you're rewarded. The reward is not only in the next world. Usually we say, Schar Mitzvah HaMaleka. So the reward is fully there for you in the next world completely. But even the peros of the mitzvah of chesed, of gemilas hasadim that you do in this world, comes back to you at some point, whether it's immediate or whether it's further down the line or in your children or in your grandchildren. But that mitzvah of chesed comes back to you even in your lifetime. But unfortunately, it also goes in the other direction. And for that, we have another story. There was a bank in Bnei Brak, and the story was told over by the owner of the bank. He said one day, a lady comes into the bank in Bnei Brak, and you see she's troubled, and she goes to the clerk, and she said, I need to take out 300 shekel. Not a lot of money. I need to take out 300 shekel from my bank, from the bank account. And the clerk looks up, and he says, I'm sorry, Mrs., you're in minus. You're already in overdraft. You've been swiping your credit card even without any money on it. I don't know how they were able to even charge your credit card. I can't give you 300 shekel. You're in minus. So she said, but I need it just for bread, for my children to be able to send them to school in the morning. I have a job. I'm going to eventually fill up my bank account. I promise I'm going to pay it back. I just would like to take out 300 shekel. He said, I'm sorry, Mrs. This isn't a gemach. We don't just give free handouts over here. You're in debt. And she said, but it's just for bread for my kids. And all of a sudden, the clerk got upset, impatient. He raised his voice, and now everybody in the room heard. And he said, Mrs., this isn't a charity fund. Pay your debt, and then you can take out money. This is a bank. Her lips started quivering. She started almost crying. She went to the head of the bank. She asked him also. He said, I'm sorry, Mrs., we can't help you. And she ran out of the bank crying. All of a sudden, the president of the bank, he felt so bad. This lady, he went outside and he took from his own pocket to give her 300 shekels. He said, I don't want a present, she said. I don't collect stock. I just want a loan. I just want to take it out from the bank. So, and she walked away. And he felt really bad because he thought to himself, you know, I could have just put that money in her bank account and then made her think that it was hers. And he felt bad that he didn't end up doing that. He goes back to his office and all of a sudden he sees the vice president of the bank who sits right next to him. He's sobbing. Sobbing. And you're crying too? That lady's crying. What are you crying about? Why are you crying? He said, you don't understand. And then he was crying. And he said, I can't believe it. So he said, what? He said, I'm 50 years old now. 40 years ago when I was 10 years old. So I was a yasom. My father had passed away. And my mother was taking care of us all alone. And she was holding two jobs. And it was very hard for her to make ends meet. And she used to walk us to cheder, to school every single morning. And on the way, we would pass by the makolet. She would buy bread, cheese, and milk. And that would be for our breakfast and for our lunch for that day. And one day, we went into the makolet, my mother and I. And she puts the things in the basket that she usually does. And she tells the guy behind the store, could you write it down? In these makolets, you could be Roshem. You could write down your name and you'll pay back at a later point. He said, Mrs., I'm sorry. You're too much in debt. I can't write you down anymore. She said, please, I'm holding two jobs. I'm going to end up paying. I just need it for bread and milk for my kids just that they should be able to eat today. I'm going to pay back. He said, Mrs., you're in debt. First pay back your debt. She said, please, this isn't a stuck-up organization. We're not giving out charity. This is a supermarket. And he raised her voice that people heard, and her lips started to quiver, and she was biting her mouth the whole way out, bringing her kids to school without any food. And that image stuck out in his head of his mother suffering, holding back her tears, and the owner of the supermarket yelling at her. He said, you don't understand. That lady who just came into the bank right now, her father was the owner of the supermarket. Her father is the one that yelled at my mother with that same sentence. This isn't a charity organization. This is a supermarket. And now that was said to his daughter just now. This is a bank. This isn't a charity organization. I'm seeing in front of me, 40 years later, the din of Shemayim coming back on his daughter. It's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Af hu ra'a gogolas achas tzafa p'nei amayim amr la ada atif atifuch v'sof mitafayich yitufun. Somebody saw a skull, a head, you know, flowing in the water. He was murdered. He said, it's because you once murdered, that's why you were murdered, and those that murdered you will one day be murdered. And the Rambam in the Parish of Mishnayos over here say that the message you're supposed to take out from this Mishnah is the bad things that we do, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, come back onto our own heads one day. And he goes on, he says, in the same is in the opposite direction. And he says, and you see this. The Rambam says himself, we see this. If you watch, and you watch a story, and you follow it through your lifetime, you will see the bad things people do end up happening to them or their children, and the good things they do also, they end up getting protected in similar areas. It's not just something that's saved for Shemayim. Elu perasem shadam ocha perasem ba'olam hazeh, we eat the fruits of it for the good and for the bad in this world. Va'karen kayamet, the sar, the onesh, is still waiting for us also in the next world. It's not just something that, oh, when we come to Shemayim, there's Gehenim, the Gehenim, then everything will be dealt with. It's even here, within this world. The Midrash Tanchuma says on the pasuk Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. So he says, Rabbi Levi Omer, Nisayin Arishon K'Nisayin Ha'Achron. Nisayin Arishon B'Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. Nisayin Ha'Achron B'Lech Lecha Al Eretz Ha'Moria. Am Avinu, we know at 10 Nisyonos, the first one started with the words Lech Lecha, says the Tanchuma, and the last one ended with the words Lech Lecha Akedis Yitzchak. So there's things that we could find in common between those nisyonos, and maybe all of them in the middle too. And the term Lech Lecha that the Midrash is being focused on, what's Lech Lecha, go for yourself? Rashi says, Lahana Ascha Ulatov Ascha. Go for your own benefit, for your own goodness. This is going to be good for you. Now, Avraham Avinu is going into a situation that I don't see how all these promises that Hashem goes on to make in the Psukim, I don't see how they're going to work. I don't see how it makes sense when you go in the desert and you go in the Midbar and you leave your family, how the things you're promising are going to work out. But he went anyway knowing that it's going to be for his good. But what gets extra difficult is that immediately when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk says, Vehi ra'av ba'aretz. There was a famine in the land. And all those promises Hashem made, he doesn't see them happening, the opposite. And he has to leave and go down to Mitzrayim, and he goes to Mitzrayim, and his wife Sarah is taken into Paro's, his wife, Avraham Avinu's wife, the Tzadik's wife, taken into Paro's palace and Paro's bedroom. Where do I see the Lech Lecha, Lahanascha, Ulatovascha? And the Chidah points out, he quotes a Zohar that says, that b'schus the fact that Sarah was kept herself pure in Paro's bedroom, and she kept him away from her, and that's because all the women in Egypt, the Jewish women in Egypt, in all the years they were there for, were never contaminated, had never slept with any Egyptian. In the merit of her keeping herself pure in Paro of Mitzrayim's house, so years later, her offspring, all the women of the Jewish people, were kept clean. And b'schus the different punishments that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent to Paro now for having taken Sarah into his bedroom, so the Eser Machlos happened to the Egyptian in Mitzrayim a couple hundred years later. So that's Lahanascha Ulatovascha. But the Lahanascha Ulatovascha came a few hundred years later, where you don't see it in front of you, but don't worry, I'm saving it for a time that you'll be repaid in a massive, major way, greater than if I pay you back immediately in front of your eyes right now. That would be small scale. I'm saving it to give it to you big scale way. And it says in Pirkei Rabbi Elazar that when Avraham Avinu gave himself his bris milah, Kosh Baba tells him to give him a bris milah, he's 99, that the blood kept on flowing for 3 days straight. He was hemorrhaging. The blood was flowing and he was in horrible pain. And it looks like Hashem tells you to do something, a mitzvah, and you're moser nefesh, and it looks like it's not working out. It looks like a mistake happened over here. But it also says in Pirkei Rabbi Elazar that in the place that his blood landed, that ended up being where the Yisoda, the Mizbeach, and the Beis HaMikdash was, where blood was mechaper and Klal Yisrael for hundreds of years after that. So the Hanascha Tovascha of Lech Lecha, when you're sent for an Nisayon, the Hanascha Tovascha, yeah, we could wait. You won't have to see it immediately in front of you, but it will be later down the line. The Dor Mabul got over 1,000 years, almost 2,000 years, to be able to live crookedly, messed uply, and it looked like they were getting away with living like cruel people, taking and uncaring and ruining Hashem's world, and then they got paid back in a massive way, in a big way. The people of Sodom and Amorah, it looks like, how could you live that cruelly? The Gemara tells stories of how selfish they were and how again, they had laws against giving to others from outside of the city, even though they had so much to give. You weren't allowed to take people in, and you weren't allowed to give out handouts, and they figured out all these ways of stealing. And if you learn the Gemara in Sanhedrin, how crooked and cruel that they were, and it looked like they were getting away with it. They were successful cities. They have bounty and they have plenty, but it was being saved up and stored until finally, we know what happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroys the cities of Sodom and Amorah. And we look at that, and right parallel next to that, we see Avraham Avinu. There's two midrashim bring down a conversation between Avram had with Noah. Noah lived long enough to see Avram Avinu. He lived long enough to see Avram Avinu. And Avram, he learned in Yeshiva Shem Be'er, so his Rebbe's father, Noah, Shem's father, Noah, he got to have a conversation with him. This isn't the Gemara Sanhedrin where Eliezer, his Eved, had a conversation with Shem. Avram had a conversation with Noah. And he asked Noah, how are you zocha to be able to leave the Teva? And he said, you should know, living in the Teva was terribly difficult. We couldn't sleep day and night because every animal eats at a different time and a different food, and the manpower to feed them was very small. We were constantly running around, and he got injured, he got hurt, and he didn't get to sleep. He was spitting blood. It was very hard for an entire year. What was he taking care of? Animals, bugs, birds, that most of them, a lot of them, he was mocking. He brought as a korban afterwards when he left the Teva. But the world needed to be built on chesed. And Avram heard this message from Noach, and he decided, he realized the importance of what is it that Hashem loves. What saves the world? Chesed. And he says, how do I do chesed? I don't need to live in a teva and take care of animals, but if that's what Hashem, how much he loves animals, Kal Vachomer he's going to love if I give to people. And he made up an entire, he created an entire system of free hotels throughout the desert, where he took people that were passing by into hotels and he fed them and gave them a place to sleep. And he was a pillar of chesed in the world and used that as a method to spread a belief in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And you look at the drastic difference between Midas Sdom and Amora and the Midas of Avraham Avinu, and you see what eventually befell Sdom and Amora and what eventually befell Avraham Avinu. And yet, even though maybe we can't be now like Avraham Avinu, and maybe with all the work we do, maybe it's not possible to get to that level. But definitely we want to put ourselves in a path, and definitely the Torah is trying to show us this, to put ourselves in a path that Avraham Avinu is on, and not in a path going in the direction of Sdom and Amorah. A few guys asked me a number of times if I can give a shmooze about dorm life, about acting appropriately in the dorm, not blasting music when people want to go to sleep, not turning on lights when people are sleeping in the room, all types of, I think, basic things like that. And I pushed them off every time they asked me about it, because I don't know if schmooze is about topics that, about obvious things that people know and still doing. What would a schmooze really help with such a thing? And you see also, if you look through the Gemara Sanhedrin, which maybe I won't go through right now, but Eliezer Eved Avram, he gave Musar to the people of Sdom, and he caught them and showed them how their way of living was selfishly was ridiculous and made no sense, and he showed them the flaws and the holes in it. And they weren't Chozer B'tshuva when Eliezer gave him the Musar that he gave them over there. When somebody's entrenched in behaving a certain way, it's very hard just with words of Musar to get them out of it. But I thought maybe if talking about this idea of how Adam Ocha Perasam Olam Hazeh, that when you're good to another person, when you sacrifice for another person, it's going to come back to you. You and your children in your lifetime, soon and later. And when you're cruel to another person, when you're insensitive, when you're thinking about yourself and not about the other person, even if they're wrong, but they're being hurt from you, it will come back to you. Chazal say it as a fact, not maybe. It will come back to you. So for our own selves, even us, who we're still self-focused, we know we're close to Avraham Avinu, but we can at least encourage ourselves with our own personal benefit. There are times that I'm going to also need to have people that treat me nicely in my room, whether it's when I'm in university or college, whether it's when I'm married, how my wife is going to treat me, how my sons are going to go to school one day, how they're going to be in their dorm. It's going to come back to me, so I'm not going to gain right now by being insensitive to the people around me just because I want to hear this song right now. Why are you going to sleep at 12:30? That's crazy. Nobody goes to sleep at 12:30. So I think that this is, it's a basic midah of the Jewish people to be considerate of the other person. The Chazon Ish writes in the letter that a Jew should see it as a goal to never not hurt another person in any of the slightest of ways his entire life. To try, you know, people try to have a track record, Snapchat, there's some tracker, I don't know, but like a good track record that somebody should be aiming for, the Chazon Ish says in a letter, is that nobody should be hurt by you in any kind of, even the slightest of ways, ever. That we should be so paranoid about maybe doing something that brings about pain, hurt, frustration to another person because of us. And we want to adopt for ourselves. We're learning these parshios. We want to adopt for ourselves these midos, these basic midos of the Jewish people of chesed and rachamim and caring for somebody else. We'll end off maybe with an idea also, Ben Adam Lamakom, the Gemara in Shabbos, when it talks about Ben Adam Lachavero, it says, the famous story, Shuv Maisa Benachri Echad Shabalef Neshamai. So there was somebody wanted to convert. He said, Shammai, teach me the Torah standing on foot. Shammai kicked him out. What did Hillel say to him? Hillel said to him, De'alach sani lechavrach lo ta'avid. Zohi kol ha-Torah kula ve'idach perushahu zil gemur. That which you don't want done to you, don't do to your friend. Everything else is just a perish of that. Go learn it. But if you had to sum up the entire Torah, what you don't want to do done to you, don't do to somebody else. Wait a second. How does that sum up the entire Torah? I understand that sums up Ben Adam Lechavero. What you don't want done to you, don't do to somebody else. What about the Ben Adam Lamakom side of the Luchos? What you don't want done to you, don't do to somebody else? And Rashi points out, yeah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu too. You don't want somebody ignoring you, don't ignore him. If you take care of somebody and give them everything in the world, you wouldn't want them to slap you back in the face and ignore you. He gives us everything in the world that we have. Don't turn our backs on him and ignore him. When he asks, when he gives us things to do, not to look at them as burdens and you're getting in my way, but to realize, what do you mean you're getting in my way? My whole existence, the mouth that's even saying that and the head that's thinking that, a head and a mouth that he put in it, and I'm about to go now and eat his food that he fed to me. So what you don't want done to you, if you would treat somebody and gift them, you wouldn't want your children one day or somebody you adopted and brought into your home and took care of them fully, you wouldn't want them, you know, treating you with the chutzpah. And therefore, what you don't want done to you, don't do to your friend, is meant to also catapult us and encourage us also in Ben Adam Lamakom. To be good people, to be Baal Chesed, it's to other people around us, and Kol Shekhen and Kav HaChomer, to be Baalei Chesed from He who we live off of, every single breath that we take and every single beat of our heart. To definitely be Baalei Chesed to the greatest of all Baalei Cheseds. Ralph, one last idea, because I see we have a little bit of time. I heard a nice idea. All the main organs are supposed to be on the right side is considered the Chashuv side. Most people are righties. We do things with our right hand. You put your right shoe on first. You put your hand in the right sleeve first. The Chazal say that if you don't know where to turn, turn to the right. So why did Kadosh Baruch Hu put our heart on the left side? That's such a surprise. If you had to guess, where would the heart be? The heart's an ikkar organ. The heart should be on the right side. Why is the heart on the left side? And the answer that I heard was, on you, it's on your left side, but the person that you're facing, it's his right. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us our lev, not for us. He gave us our lev to give to the person that's across from us. It is on the right side for the person that's across from you. And our hearts, when we say that the midos of the Jewish people is Shali, Shacha, 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 that what's mine is yours, what's yours is yours, that's everything, and that's our heart too. To give our heart, that we're not concerned for my comforts, I'm concerned for your comforts. I'm not concerned for my... That Aksil, a fool, his heart is on the left side, or she said, because he's focused on himself. He's thinking just about himself. That it's not, do I want to hear this song right now, or do I need to find my closet, do I need to turn on the light right now, and I hope he doesn't wake up. That's a heart being on the left side, focused on oneself. But a heart being on the right side is your focus on the other people that are there in the room, that are there in the hallway, how you talk to your chavrusa, if he gets the wrong pshat. It's pasha. Sometimes I forget... You never put your chavrusa down for saying wrong pshat. The way you argue with your chavrusa is with kavod and with respect, and you're trying to figure out the pshat. You're not trying to win this chavrusa. You're not trying to beat the other guy. There's never, you don't make funny faces at him. Are you crazy? Where'd you get that from? You don't turn this into a bad midah of competition with another person. The two of you together trying to figure out pshat in the Gemara. We should be zocher. Yeah.